Okay, well, you want to hear a good story?
Of course.
An aggravating story.
Oh.
You know that Batman 457 that I was bidding on that went for $1,100 the other day?
Yes.
Dennis was out on CBSI website, the comic book speculation and investing, and they had one of the people that post on that, he put up a little blurb out there and said, you know, this thing went for $1,100 and said for a raw copy that's not even a 9.0, probably not even 8.0, $1,100 is pretty insane.
It is.
And in the comments, several people were posting comments, and the guy who sold it posted.
No.
He said, yeah, I couldn't believe it went for that high. Then he said this, and this, he said, I found it at the Fan Expo Dallas convention a couple weeks ago. I would have been at that convention, except it was the same weekend as C2E2.
How much did he pay for it, did he say?
He didn't, no.
Yeah, he's not going to say.
Now, it's not to say I would have found it or gotten it, but it's just to know that I would have at least had been in the ballpark. Had the Fan Expo, damn Fan Expo exhibition, had been any other weekend at Z2E2.
That's amazing. Good for that guy, though, dude. I don't know it went for that much. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, it was insane because it was under $400 still with about a minute to go, and I'm bidding on it, and I was high bidder for a couple times, and it went to like 405. And I'm bidding odd amounts, like 435, 455, so they can't try to predict what my high is going to be.
Yeah.
And it went like 405, and I bid 435, and it was like 440. So then I bid 455, and it came back and said, high bid 820. And I blinked.
Wait.
I'm like, what? Then it went to 1,030, and then 1,100. Boom, and that was the last second, and it was over, and I'm like, son of a bitch.
You know what I bet happened? That's the problem with auctions, dude. Because they can go for, like, days and days and days, and there's no change or minimal change.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, the last 5 minutes, it goes crazy. I bet what happened was somebody really wanted the book, and they're like, nobody in their right mind is going to pay $1,100 for this. Let me do high bid $1,100.
Right.
And then everybody's just like trying to beat it. And all of a sudden, there it is at
$1,100.
You know? And I bet now he's stuck with it.
Right. Because, I mean, Dennis and I looked at it for about an hour. Not that long. But we looked at it for a good 30, 40 minutes and at the pictures as best we could tell. And his expert said, this is probably between a 6, 5, and 7. Best I can tell, without seeing the interior. And that's the thing, because you don't know what's that's inside of the thing. You know, and in a way, I'm glad it went for $1,100 because that was way beyond what I would pay for it. You know, if I had barely lost out on it, that's what makes you sick, is when you just.
Yeah, especially for a raw copy like that. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's like.
And what was it? It's a what? Newsstand edition? Like some printing.
Second print.
Right? Second
newsstand.
Print.
Edition.
Yeah. That is ridiculous. What's and Overstreet on that?
I don't know. I haven't looked. I know that we were looking at comparables. I know Dennis said, a CGC 5.5 sold for $900 recently.
Hmm.
I don't know why this thing's blowing up that much. I mean, it is rare. There's only about between 15 and 20 known extant copies of it.
Yeah.
But still.
It is also first 10 Drake as Robin.
Right. It's first 10 Drake as Robin. That's, you know.
That's important, I guess.
It is. But, wow. I mean, just. And you figure a newsstand issue, the chances of finding, you know, being knocked around on a newsstand, the chances of finding one that's 9-0 is pretty damn rare.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was just a funny story. When he told me that, he goes, you're going to be sick when I tell you this. It's like, son of a bitch. I can't believe that was in Dallas. I mean, just, yeah. But anyway, funny story. The vicissitudes of collecting comics. Drive me nuts.
It sounds to me like you need some therapy. And lucky for you, It is the perfect time for that, because this is Therapy Thursday for Comic Talk Today. What day is today? April 19th, 2018. And if you didn't recognize that voice, joining me tonight on this Therapy Thursday is the one, the only, the incomparable Jay Loving from the Best of the Rest podcast.
Good evening, sir. Wow, that's quite an introduction.
I try to give every guest good introductions.
Well, that's good.
Except for Paul.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Paul should just get the worst introductions. Did you see the whole thing about his dang logo on his new podcast?
Yes.
He's such an a-hole. Let me fill everybody in. So he's been doing this podcast, Comics in Black and White, which you were on with Dennis before you guys ditched Paul because he's the worst and started your own podcast, Best of the Rest. And he's like, I'm going to change the name. So I give him a name, and now he doesn't want to change the name. So I was like, well, you know, if you're going to change the name, you need a logo and a show description and all that. And so he's off this week. He's on vacation. And he sends me this picture. He's like, I'm going to send you the logo. I was like, all right, cool. Because he'd been asking me about like how to use GIMP and all that stuff. And so I get an email from Paul, and I open the picture. And it's like a stick figure in front of his little toy house that he built in his backyard with the logo that I already made for Comics in Black and White. And it just looks like, I don't know, a cartoon monster with a giant penis on it. And I was like, Paul, no, you can't be serious. And of course, he had to talk about it on his podcast, saying that I was being mean to him because I wouldn't use the logo that his son so kindly drew for him. And we all know the truth, Paul. He's not fooling anybody. He's not fooling anybody. So today or yesterday, well, today as we record, yesterday as you're listening, Action Comics 1000 came out. And so guess what we're not talking about today, Jay?
That's fine with me. I got my two covers. I haven't read it yet, but I'm not in any hurry, so.
Oh, you did? So you got two. Which one did you get?
I got the, let me see here, the 70s variant cover by Stranko.
Nice.
And the cover A, the Jim Lee cover.
Nice. Yeah, I saw Stranko at the local con here. What day? When was that? In March? Last month. Which I didn't even know he was showing up. Because I saw him at Heroes. I went to the panel that he did at Heroes last year. And it was freaking awesome. Dude, Stranko is the tiniest man in the world. He's got to be like 5 foot tall, like 100 pounds. He is tiny. But he's got a giant personality. He always wears like his 70s suits. Like bell-bottom suits, and he's got this big hair and his giant glasses. It's freaking awesome.
Enjoyed his work over the years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was awesome. He was really awesome. But, yeah, I didn't read that, but I did read Batman 45. Did you read Batman 45?
I haven't read it yet, no.
Oh, man. All right, so I want to talk about Batman 45 indirectly since you haven't read it.
Spoilers don't bother me, so, I mean, you can talk.
No, and I mean
freely, for as far as I'm concerned,
there's no spoilers. Like I think the synopsis of the story is out, right? It's like Booster Gold shows up and he goes back in time to stop Bruce's parents from getting killed, and like that's Booster Gold's wedding present for Bruce, right? Like here, right. Now you can see what your life would have been like if your parents weren't killed, and like shenanigans ensue, of course. There's an awesome Batman in this. It's not Bruce Wayne. And he's got a ton of pouches. And I was hoping that Liefeld drew it, but he didn't. But as I was reading, and I just posted the pictures in our Discord chat, because I know Ronnie really liked the issue. And I thought it was fine. Considering I haven't liked the current Batman run that much, I thought it was a pretty good issue. Although Booster Gold kind of annoys me, to be honest. So
yeah, not one of my... Well, I don't know, I'm kind of indifferent on him.
The thing is, like, I don't like a ton of jokes, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's why I don't like reading Deadpool, because Deadpool's just joke after joke. Or, like, Harley Quinn has become that, too. So yeah, so I'm not a huge fan of like a ton of comedy in my comics, but I thought the way Tom King did it was actually pretty interesting. So I'm curious, once you read it, I'm curious to know what you think about it. But there is mention in the book to a Superman story. And like Booster's talking to his little robot thing, whatever it's called. And he's like, yeah, this is like when Superman got like trapped by that Black Mercy plant thing and like imagined what the world would be like if he wasn't Superman. And so I had to look up the story, dude. I found it. And let me tell you, if you get a chance to read it, go read this instead of anything else that you're reading right now.
Okay.
Because it was really freaking good. It's Superman Annual number 11, which came out sometime in 85. Is there a date on this? I don't think they put dates on old comics, did they?
They did up until about 2011 or 12, because I know I've looked at some of my 2011 comics, and it still put the month and year on there, so I don't know when they started. I think they stopped, at least DC stopped, about the time New 52 started.
Yeah, I was trying to find a month on here, but all I see is a date. It just says 85.
That's weird. Supes Annual 11.
Yep, Supes Annual 11. By the way, I don't know if you knew this, but the DC offices used to be at 666 Fifth Avenue. That's a little weird.
Oh, really? That is.
Anyway, so this is written by Alan Moore. And the art is Dave Gibbons. And it is freaking awesome, dude. It kicks off in Krypton until you, well, the first page. And then the second page, you see Wonder Woman outside the invisible jet waiting for Batman and Robin. And Robin here is Jason Todd. Because this is like right after Jason Todd came about. And yeah. So Wonder Woman hasn't met Robin yet. And she's like, oh yeah, I heard that you had a new robber, but like I hadn't met him yet. She's like, hey, Robin boy, like, have you been to the Fortress of Solitude? He's like, no. He's like, I've met Superman, but I've never been here, blah, blah, blah. They're talking, and like, Jason Todd's checking Wonder Woman out as she walks off. And Batman's like, think clean thoughts, chum. And I was like, oh my god, this is freaking amazing. So they go into the Fortress of Solitude, and they find Superman standing in a room, and he's got this, like, octopus looking thing like strapped all around his chest, and apparently as we learn, it's like this weird plant that he got as a present. Oh, I should have said, it's Superman's birthday, and so he's getting gifts from all the heroes, and somebody sent them this plant as a gift. As we find out, of course, it's one of the villains, it's not a hero. And so he starts having these thoughts, because what the plant does is it gives you, like, your perfect life. Like, everything that you would ever want out of life, it makes you hallucinate that, kind of.
Yeah.
And so Superman never left Krypton, because Krypton never blew up. And so he's a grown man living in Krypton. He's married to Lila Lyrell. Which appeared really early on in Superman comics, Superman 141, and she was an actress in Krypton, so he's married to her, and they have two kids, Van-El, and I can't remember the other girl's name. And it was a little confusing at first, because Kara is in here, Supergirl. She shows up as they're getting ready for this birthday party, but like the way the dialogue is set up is really odd. And it almost, like, at first I thought that, Superman was married to Kara, and I was like, that's a little creepy, Alan Moore, like, how are you marrying this guy to his cousin? And I thought it, like, all the way through to the end, because at the end, when they get this plant off of Superman, it ends up on Batman's chest, and so Batman's, like, daydreaming or whatever, and when he gets knocked out of the dream, he's talking about how he was married to Kathy Kane. And, you know, like, there was that whole thing. I know you like old Batman stuff. Did you ever read, oh, God, what issue was it? Let me see if I can find it. 122. The Marriage of Batman and Batwoman.
Yes, it's been, God, it's been years.
Yeah, yeah, it's hilarious. And the thing was, is that, like, that's also an Elseworlds type story, because they're not actually getting married. Robin, like, falls asleep while Batman and Batwoman are out fighting crime. He falls asleep, as he did quite often in those Golden Age books, and, like, had these weird dreams. And in his dream, he dreams that Batman and Batwoman get married, because he's, like, trying to, like, he feels like Batman's trying to replace him with Batwoman. And, so he's got this dream about them getting married and, like, running off. And so it's kind of like, a hint to that particular issue. But it was really well done. I'm not gonna, like, spoil the whole thing, cause it's really worth reading. But I was totally amazed. And, while Batman 45 this week was really good, going back and reading that Superman annual was just freaking incredible. Incredible. It's been so long since I read any Alan Moore, you know?
Right.
And to see him tackle Superman so early on, it was awesome. And this was pre-crisis, too.
Right.
So there's a lot of continuity that I forgot about, because a lot of that has changed over the years.
Yeah. Oh, that. But yeah, I was looking up the cover of that 122. I remember it now.
Yeah.
Robin Senator, gosh, what will become of me now?
It's freaking awesome.
I'll look that up. I want to read that Superman.
Yeah, you should read it. It's really, really good. $1.99 on Comixology.
Worth it? Worth it?
Yeah, very much worth it. It's got an average 5-star rating out of 347 people that rated it.
Wow.
That's pretty solid.
That is solid, yes.
That's pretty solid. I'm going to end up going into an Alan Moore rabbit hole, I'm pretty sure. Or at least a weird Superman rabbit hole. I was talking to Nick last week when he and I recorded, and because I was reading Superman Savage Dragon, which was, it was not great, but it was a fun read. And coming upon this issue today, like, I think maybe I just want to read, like, this era of Superman. You know what I'm saying? Like, mid-80s? And just see where it takes me. Because he did, like, a bunch of stuff. I don't know. All right, so you're an indie comics guy. Did you ever read Supreme when he did that for Image?
No, I did not.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, it's so good. Did you ever read... What's that guy's name? Was it Miller? No, it wasn't Miller. It was Mark Waid. The Irredeemable?
I don't recall. If I did, I've forgotten it.
I'm trying to think who puts that out. I think Boom Studio puts it out. Irredeemable was a story of, like, what if Superman goes bad? And, like, right, how would the Justice League tackle that? And, like, Irredeemable is the character. He's the Superman analog. And he goes, like, completely bat-crap crazy. And just, like, starts killing everything. And, of course, nobody can stop him because... freaking Superman, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think it ran for a long time, dude. It was like at least 50 issues. And then he tried to do a play on Batman with oh god, I can't remember the name of the other book. It was something also Emable. I can't remember what it was. But
DC books?
No, these Boom put them out.
Boom, okay.
Yeah, Boom put them out. I'm trying to think when. I want to say maybe like mid 2000s.
Okay.
He did Irredeemable first, and then the other one was, oh man, I want to say Inconceivable, but I know that's not it. All right, here we go. Irredeemable ran from 09 to 2012. It was 37 issues. It's Mark Waid, and the art is Peter Krause and Diego Barreto. God, it was so good.
Jotting this down, too.
Yeah, well worth reading. If you have Comixology Unlimited... it's free on there.
Really? I do have Unlimited.
Yeah. It's free on there. And the other one's probably on there too. I'm sure it'll pop up. Oh man, why don't they just like say it on here? The Plutonian, that's his name.
Okay.
Incorruptible was the other one.
Incorruptible.
Yeah. It's a supervillain that, it's like the opposite. Max Damage was the main character in Incorruptible. He used to be a villain, one of Plutonian's villains, and then he decided to be a good guy. after he sees the Plutonian go crazy. And that one ran almost concurrently. That was like 30 issues. God, I can't believe you never read those, dude. Those are freaking incredible. I would say it's my favorite thing that Mark Waid has ever done.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, as far as Image, they're not, when, that's the time Image was starting. I was early to mid 90s. That was a time when I was out on the periphery of comic books. I wasn't reading much in those years. So I missed a lot of the early Image stuff. Mm-hmm. First number of years. And I've never read a lot of Boom. Probably should have read more, but I've not read a lot of their titles.
I mean, I've read some Boom, but this is the one that I always remember. Because I was picking it up in floppies when it was coming out. And yeah, it's really good. I recently reread it because, like I said, it's on Comixology Unlimited, but well worth it. And as for early Image, I mean, you're not really missing much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I know Dennis is trying to collect a lot of the early stuff.
But is he?
Yeah.
Hope he doesn't read it.
I've heard some, some stories about Image.
All right, let me say this. There was good stuff from early Image. Like, Spawn was really, really good. I would say the first 50 issues of Spawn were really solid. Well, for sure the first 25. I would go up to 50. I think most people would say 25. That was really solid. I was a huge fan of, like, Witchblade and the Darkness back then. I bought all the Liefeld stuff. But, dude, all right, so last night I was trying to... I reread a couple issues because Mike Labby from the What Did You Watch podcast, he was looking for a particular comic. And it sounded familiar, so I started looking at stuff. And I know Ronnie was looking some stuff up also. And as a result, I ended up reading Bloodstrike number 1 and Brigade number 1. And holy balls, were they bad. Like, really bad. And the thing is, I remember, like, 12-year-old Martin reading these books when they came out, and I thought they were the greatest thing ever. But they definitely don't hold up, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard some nightmare stories about the early Image. Oh, I mean, among other things, they got to where they were running 6, 7, 8 months late on issues. Because these guys had no editorial accountability for getting the books out on time. You know?
Yeah, and the only one that really cared about scheduling seemed to be McFarlane.
Right.
At least that's the way that it appears. I don't know if you ever saw Image Revolution, that documentary.
I have not.
Oh, man, you got to see that. I don't think it's free streaming anywhere, so you might just need to rent it. But it's really good. It talks about, like, the first few years of Image, like, from, like, what led up to the formation of Image Comics, and then, like, the early years. I think it ended, like, somewhere around the time where they kicked Liefeld out.
Right.
And McFarlane's definitely the dad of the group. And he comes off a little bit like a douchebag, but, like, the thing is, if they're all acting like kids, you know, like, somebody's got to be an adult. They're running companies. You know? But it was crazy, like, the amount of money that they were spending. Like, they were paying artists, like, $20,000 an issue, you know? Like, Rob Liefeld would go out and, like, buy the whole staff Ferraris.
Interesting.
Good. I'm telling you, dude, early Image days, those were the days.
Yep, sounds like it. Okay, I've got that written down. Man, I'm making all kinds of notes here, things I need to read or watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this reminds me, Sparky, I never mentioned this, but Sparky, I think it was when I did the first Therapy Thursday episode, he's like, wait, so is Therapy Thursday like therapy for Martin or for the host? Or for the guest? And I don't know, man.
It's sort of, it's mutual therapy, I guess.
Yeah, so. Mutual therapy, I guess. I guess. There's, there's just, like, things that bug me, you know? And it's just kind of nice to be able to talk it through with somebody. So yeah, Sparky, to answer your question, I think I'm sitting on the couch. I'm on the therapy couch, and Jay's my doctor taking notes.
Oh gosh.
At the end of the episode, you can give me a Rorschach test. See how I did.
So that, now that brings us over to Doomsday Clock. Sorry, Rorschach.
Never heard of it. I still haven't read that last issue of Doomsday Clock.
I'm a couple of issues behind on it.
Yeah, I think it's okay to be behind on it. I think people were really excited at first, but you know, like the more the story goes through and the more I see other stuff happening in the DC universe, like I don't feel compelled to read it immediately. Especially with the whole DC metal thing.
Right. Well, like you, I've only read like the first one or two issues of Metal. I've still got that whole series to read.
Oh.
Still, I haven't read. I've been just queuing them up. I just like was waiting for time to get to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been focused so much on indie comics for obvious reasons. But
oh, dude, you know what? That's probably okay because there's a lot of good indie comics.
Yeah.
And oh, I'm gonna be honest. I have one issue left of Metal, and it's fine. So no need to rush.
Okay, I'm not.
but I do recommend reading it all at once because there's so much like crazy crap that happens that I think it just flows a lot better reading it all in one go.
Right. Some comics are like that. You know, I think you mentioned you had read at least part of Kid Lobotomy.
Yeah, I read the first issue.
And I read the first two issues of that. I'm like, I don't know what the hell is going on. It is bizarre. So I let a couple of, I said, I'm really a big fan. I'm hoping that this Black Mask Studio, or Black Crown,
yeah.
Does well because the editor, I've forgotten her name now, she was at Vertigo for years, and they kind of ousted her. And this is, so I'm really pulling for her because I really, you know, she did such a great job at Vertigo, and I think they treated her unfairly by ousting her. So I'm really hoping that this Black Crown does well. So I decided I'm staying with Kid Lobotomy. I queued up 3 and 4, and then I read all 4 of the first of issues together. And it, you can start to make out, understand it and read it. It's probably would be better if anybody's interested to wait for the trade to come out and read it.
Yeah, yeah.
All at once. Because it's bizarre, but it's, and I like bizarre. I like different, but it is really out there, but it definitely probably, for me at least, it reads better, you know, all at once or in chunks other than going month by month.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It seems like the smaller indie publishers that are really trying different stuff, those books do definitely read better in trade because they're trying to do such subtle things with the story that if you're just reading like one issue at a time, it doesn't quite make sense. And you're going to end up being like, well, this book's probably not very good because I don't know what the hell's happening. Or like, where's the character development? Or any of that kind of thing, you know? But once you read them all together, it definitely feels a lot different. I was just looking at the other books they have. Is it just 3? In Lobotomy, Assassinistas, and Punk's Not Dead?
That's all it's out right now.
Okay.
And they've also put out 3 quarterly issues. Black Crown Quarterly number 3 came out today, but I didn't have it on my list and it was gone by the time I got to my LCS. But yeah, that's the only 3 they've got out, the titles they've got out so far.
What's the quarterly?
It's, sort of, they write, like the first one had kind of a little bit of a background story for Kid Lobotomy. It's a combination of some comic, but also some nonfiction stuff. Our editor's writing some editorials, information. They're trying to build this little community around this fictional pub, the Black Crown. You know, kind of the idea is, you know, everybody's coming to this pub to be together and camaraderie around these particular, all these titles. Now, that's not saying it's a shared universe. It's not.
So it's not, so the quarterly is not an anthology book then. It's just like additional material.
Yeah.
Interesting. Are they going to be putting that in the trades for the books?
I don't know.
Huh.
I mean.
So that seems like something that'd be interesting for people that are diving into these weird universes, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that could be cool. They have a couple books that are coming out too. Euthanauts. That's Tinny Howard. And then House Amok is Chris Sabella, which I like Sabella a lot. He's doing Cold War and Aftershock, which it seems like people either love it or hate the hell out of it. Like there's nobody in between. Which I understand.
I'm liking
why.
It.
Yeah, I like it.
So far, what I've read, I like the art too. Hayden Sherman.
Yep.
I think he's the one that. Well, he's doing the art for Wasted Space.
Wasted Space, yeah.
That we just did the interview with.
Yeah, that was a good interview, Marisi. By the way. If you're listening to this, go check out, what episode is that? It would help if I let you guys see episode numbers, huh?
It's 22, but it's just simply called Interview with Michael Marisi.
Yeah, there you go. NerdLegion.com/episodes/BOTR-22.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a really good interview. Marisi was really interesting.
He was. I mean, I've corresponded with him a couple times before and since.
Yeah.
I sent him an email today with the link to the podcast saying, here, if you want to listen. And he was like, oh, thanks. I'll send this on to the other creators. And he was really nice.
Nice.
And man, my God, that thing, just going by the Twitter, activity today, that book is getting a lot of attention and a lot of good publicity as well.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's a good book. I know you sent me the copy a couple of weeks ago and I read it and I thought it was really interesting. I've got to reread it again now that the book's actually out and people are talking about it, just so I can refresh my memory. But just hearing Marisi talk on your podcast was really cool. And you know, anytime anybody says, hey, well, I love Philip K. Dick, then I got to go, you know, see whatever they're doing anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, and that's like, if you read the page before the splash page of this, the little blurb, you know, they describe it as Philip K. Dick thrown in a blender with Punisher.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, who's not in when you read that? It's like, oh my God.
Well, I mean, it depends, right? Because Ronnie hates the Punisher.
That's true. That is true.
Yes. That guy. He's something else. But, yeah, Wasted Space is really good. That's, Vault Comics.
Yes.
Vault's doing interesting stuff, dude. Vault, like, people are sleeping on Vault. Don't sleep on Vault.
No?
Don't sleep on Vault. I would say don't sleep on any of the new indie publishers. Black Crown, Vault, Aftershock. I'm trying to think what other ones. Well, Alterna, of course. Although the thing with Alterna is, like, a lot of the books are reprints now.
Yeah.
Right? They're not, like, they don't have original books coming out.
Well, they're getting more now, especially at first. When they first started this, for people who may not be aware, they started about a year ago putting out newsprint books. Low cost books at $1 and $1.50 cover price,
mm-hmm.
which I'm in big favor of because anything that helps bring down the cost of books.
Oh, hell yeah.
But I know the first four titles that they put out were all, or more than that, but five or six were all reprints. They were doing primarily digital comics and some trades. And then they reprinted several, like The Chair by,
Yes, Cimetti.
Peter Cimetti.
Yep.
That was originally a digital only comic, and that was a re- They put that out in this new print format.
Dude, I want to see that movie.
Yeah, I have too. I've been meaning to try to take some time.
I don't even know where to find it now. Like, you probably have to buy it. I'm sure it's not on Netflix or Amazon or anything. But I remember when he did the Kickstarter for the movie years ago. This was like 2012 or 2013 probably. Because I remember it was around the time where Valiant had relaunched. So it had to be around like 2013 then. And he was doing the Kickstarter. And I was talking to Peter quite a bit back then because he had posted some sketch of, oh God, what was it? I don't know, some character, and I was like, oh, this is freaking awesome. And I had a little commission of the Joker done by Peter Cimetti, and it was like dirt cheap too. And so ever since then, I've been following like what he does. But it really does seem like now with the 150 books coming out, they're really getting a lot of traction. Either that or like the Twitter algorithm has me in its grasps and I see it like all day long, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, they do interesting stuff. I wonder how well their new books would do at 150. And I don't mean like sales-wise. I mean like for the creators.
See, that's what I don't know. I'm really would be curious to know. I might try to see if we can talk to somebody sometime. Get him on.
Yeah, that'd be
because I'm really curious. I corresponded with him for a while, and then it kind of fell off. It was about the time when a lot of new books were coming back, and I think he's just so busy.
Yeah.
And so, but maybe things will settle down. We can get him on the podcast at some point.
Well, now's probably a good time because there's no like real big cons until New York.
Right.
So it's probably as good a time as any. Yeah, they're doing cool stuff, but like it just seems odd that the price of paper alone would be enough for books to be put out at like $2.99 or $3.99, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about publishing and, you know, the economies of scale of buying a lot of, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. I couldn't even tell you what the cost of printing a comic book is.
Yeah.
Couldn't even close. It's probably less than you might think.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I mean, I know that there's been some books for certain publishers where like retailers are buying them at like 80 cents a piece. You know, and these are $3.99 books. So, you know, they might be taking a loss on those because they don't happen all the time. But they do happen for, you know, like big releases. They'll do massive discounts. But, you know, you got to meet a certain order threshold, you know, whatever it is. Like, you have to order 1,000 copies or something. You know, something crazy like that. Because I'm sure by that point, like, you know, with economies of scale, you kind of outweighing whatever your costs were to create the book anyway.
Right.
So maybe at that point it makes sense. But they usually keep a lot of this stuff pretty secret and only release that info to retailers. So
sure.
It's a little harder to track down.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I know that this became a joke today in our chat, but you can get a couple of Vault comics for free.
You can?
Yes.
Why wasn't I made aware of this?
Oh, come on now. yeah, if you go to the Vault website, they have a free comic section, and it's books that aren't even out yet.
Well, they were supposed to come out today, I think. They were supposed to release today from what I read on their Twitter.
Yeah.
And there was a delay, so they're, as a way of apologizing to their readership, they're offering these two out for free.
Yeah, because I was looking forward to picking up, what was it, Songs for the Dead, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's one of them, yeah.
Because originally that was coming out today and Wasted Space, and I was like, cool, two Vault comics in 1 week. And I saw that Adam, the editor-in-chief at Vault, posted that somehow Diamond wasn't shipping their books out today. And so he's like, you can get Songs of the Dead and Cult Classic for free on their website. I wonder what I wonder how Diamond feels about that.
I don't know. They may not have much of a say in it, and it's like,
well, like, it's a small publisher, right? Like, if Marvel did that, then it might be a problem, right? But like, how many comics does Vault sell in a month? You know, like, it's got to be less than 5,000.
Well, Marvel did something like that here not too long ago. I forgot, was it a Doctor Strange? There was one book. Oh gosh, Ronnie could probably tell me if he were here. There was one book that they underestimated badly, the demand on it, and it sold out in just like an hour. And they made a digital copy available for no cost for, not for long. It was like 24 hours or 36 hours, something like that.
Hmm.
I can't remember when it was.
Yeah, I have no
this
idea.
This was like in, this was like in October, November of last year, best I remember.
Huh. Yeah, I have no idea. I know that they like to double ship books for free.
Yes.
But other than that, I'm not even sure. Yeah, check those out. I can't remember who does Songs for the Dead, but Cult Classic is, oh god, now I forgot his name. Dang it! Elliot Rahal, that's who it is. Cult Classic. That's gonna be a good one, man. I haven't read it yet, but I'm excited to pick it up. I'm excited to pick it up. So what else is happening? What kind of therapy are you in need of?
Probably more than you could even imagine. No, we talked about the Batman 457, so that's old.
Yeah. That's a good one, though. A good one.
Yeah, that is.
We haven't talked about Batman in a long time, dude. We should bring back that Batman podcast.
Yeah. I'm willing anytime we can.
Yeah.
Except you've got so much shit going on right now. I can't, especially with, when you started Comic Talk today, I figured, okay, that those Batman animated things are, they're gone for right now.
Yeah. No, I thought about that. I was like, well, crap, like, what's going to happen with these other ones? And then, like, with Valiant Central winding down, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll have plenty of time. But then, of course, like, stuff goes downhill at work, so I'm, you know, working 28 hours a day, like Aaron says. And then I do this show, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week. And it just kind of, I don't know, man.
It's tough. I don't know how you do it. Anyway, it's like it's
magic.
Magic, yes.
Magic. Don't you know I travel through time?
That's true. You're the revisionist.
I'm the revisionist. Inside joke for Aftershock fans. You don't read Aftershock, yes. Shame on you. But
I wonder if they're going to, because weren't they planning on doing a second series of that? Or there was talk about it at least.
Yeah, there was. I don't know what happened to that. Because they haven't announced anything, they just keep announcing new titles. And some of them are, they look really good. I know we had a couple that came out today, one new one and one existing one. But Her Infernal Descent is just my favorite thing this year.
I've got it, I haven't read it yet.
Shame on you, at least you got it.
I didn't get to my LCS till late this afternoon.
I know. That's the thing too, like, you know, recording on a new comic book day, like, you haven't read anything. I mean, I haven't read anything from today either, aside from stuff that I've already had for weeks in my inbox.
Right.
You know? And then, I read Infidel number 2, because I really dug the first one, and.
Yeah, Infidel.
Yeah. I read Batman, so I didn't have to worry about spoilers or anything like that.
Right.
But other than that, like, I haven't read anything. And I probably won't till this weekend. But Weiss having a yard sale.
Oh, yeah?
I'm a little worried.
I hate yard sales and garage sales. I hate them. I will not do them.
Well, so usually I've been working on Saturdays. But I told him, look, this Saturday, there's no way I can come in and do anything. Like, don't even call me. My wife is having a yard sale. Because my concern is that I'm going to go to work and then come back and have, like, long boxes of comics missing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want that.
Yeah, no, you don't. No.
No, don't want that.
Especially all your Batman stuff. Oh, he doesn't need this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there's stuff that, like, is just still in boxes in the garage that I've never opened. So I got to make sure that those things stay in the box like they're supposed to, and she doesn't try to sell it off. I had what do I have in there? That first appearance of Talia that I got, the Detective 411, I haven't even opened that yet. Like, that's still in the shipping box that I got. What else did I get? I got a fresh Floronic Man. Like, that's still in the shipping box. I just bought some Batman stuff. Let me pull up my spreadsheet here. Because even though I'm very high tech, I do keep a spreadsheet of comics. Where is it? This is. Alright, this is what I have still in a box, not opened. A Tech 405, first League of Assassins. Tech 411, first Talia. That's not it. That's on the way. First Killer Moth, Batman 63. And Detective 356. That's the first Outsider. Which is my favorite thing ever. Have you ever read that issue?
Probably. Again, that, some of those.
All right, so I'll explain it to you. This is like a whole weird continuity thing. So for like years, I can't remember how long, but it was a few years. Alfred was not in Batman, right? Like he showed up in like Batman 16, I think it was. And, like, he was the butler throughout. And then sometime in, like, the early 60s, like, 61, 62, they brought in Aunt Harriet. Yes. Who, if I'm not mistaken, was in the TV show, right? In Batman 66.
She was. Yeah. Both her and Alfred.
Both her and Alfred. But Alfred was not in the comic. And I can't remember what the deal was. Like, I think he died. I want to say he got killed. And so Aunt Harriet took over Alfred's spot. And then in 64, Alfred made his return as this, like, weird, like, cosmic, mystical guy called the Outsider. And so, yeah, and so that's Detective 356.
That doesn't surprise me, because those 60s Batman comics.
Oh, my God. They're crazy.
Really strange.
They are crazy. I need to like hurry up and get to like the 60 stuff, because there's just some weird ass crap in there, dude. Because you know, like, you have the environmentalist movement popping up. There's a lot of political unrest, and so like when you translate those kind of things from real life into comics or like fiction of any kind, even like books or TV, you get a lot of like weird stuff that's tangentially related. So that's where you get like a lot of monster flicks, you get like zombie movies popping in and all that stuff. Because that's just the kind of thing that it translates to when you try to make it into fiction. And some of those guys got really inventive, dude. Like, they were popping some LSD, man, I'm telling you.
Well, and they were also, you also got to remember, in the early 60s, they started to get away from in the late 60s, but the early to mid 60s, they were still pretty stifled by that damn comics code of what they can do and what they can't do. And, you know, that's part of the reason that, you know, the Joker became really a buffoonish character.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't, you know, portray him in his original way or the way he is now as being this, you know, cold-blooded killer, because, you know, bad guys could never triumph, and there's so much you couldn't do because of the comics code.
Mm-hmm.
It really stifled a lot of, I think, good comics to the late 50s into the, probably about the mid 50s to the mid 60s.
I agree. Almost like somebody should do a podcast about that.
You know, somebody may be doing that.
Oh, things we can't talk about. Mm-mm-mm. But, yeah, that's good stuff, man. I'll pop the boxes open at some point. Right. You know, like things like that that I'm looking for a while and I just finally get. I'm not like in any rush to open them up and read them. Cause a lot of these I've read digitally, cause I figured it would be a while before I actually purchased a physical copy. And, so I already read them, so it's not like I need to open them to read them. I just, now I know I have them and I don't need to worry about it. So whenever I get time, I'll be, popping up in my mail. God knows what I'll find in there. Like, there's gonna be crap in there that I have no idea. I know that for a fact.
I haven't decided what my next focus on collecting, at least for Batman, is going to be. What I did last year, and Dennis helped me a lot, was I wanted every book that Norm Breyfogle did, either interiors and or a cover for.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I've got pretty much everything. Batman, Detective Comics, a couple of ancillary things that he did. Because he's just probably my favorite artist. Well, he is. It's what's close between Breyfogle and Aparo.
Hell yeah.
And I give Breyfogle a nod because he's left-handed, so, and I'm left-handed.
So I'm also reason. Left-handed.
And so was Leonardo da Vinci. All the most intelligent men of the world were left-handed.
See? So. Sorry, right-handed people.
So I don't know what my next focus is for collecting is going to be.
I've got one. I'm doing odd villains. So I'm looking at Batman 195, which is Bag of Bones. Batman 112, Signal Man. I love Signal Man. Have you ever read that?
Yes.
All right. Batman 112 is freaking awesome.
But you also like, what is it, The Man with 10 Eyes? Or...
Yeah, 10-Eyed Man. I've got that. Man. Batman 226. I just bought that like a couple months ago.
I remember when you got it. I remember.
Yep. What else am I looking at? Batman 133. It's Kite Man. Detective 351. Clue Master. Tech 74 is Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Arkham Asylum Living Hell is Humpty Dumpty. And what else? Tech 261 is Dr. Double X, who I also love.
Gosh. There is nothing to compare to the Batman Rogues Gallery.
No, there's not. Oh.
Nobody in
I missed one. Crazy Quilt. Boy Commandos number 15.
Now, that's a new one. I've not heard of that.
Oh, dude, yeah. That's a freaking hard one to find. It's from, like, I think it came out in 45 or 46. Yeah, it's a doozy. I've only seen like one copy in the last couple months available for sale anywhere.
I'm trying to, there's another one I'm thinking about. Eraserman? Eraserhead?
Eraserman. The David Lynch movie?
No, this is a Batman character. The guy was his head was a pencil. I look like an eraser on it. Batman villain. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, The Eraser.
The Eraser, yes.
Yeah, The Eraser. Was that? That wasn't in the comic, was it?
I'm thinking it was.
Oh, God, if it is. Oh, boy. Yep, I found it. Damn it, I gotta put this on my list. Batman 188.
Your dick. Yes. I thought I remembered that.
Yep. Batman 188. The Eraser. God, dude, this is freaking awesome. He's got... He looks like Dick Tracy with a pencil head.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Well, he's a yellow suit, which, you know, is supposed to be that looked like the yellow paint that's on the outside of a pencil. And then his head, the face is the ferrule of the, where the eraser is.
Yep. Yes. Yep. Here, you want to hear his special ability?
I can't remember what it was, but yeah,
Special helmet eraser able to rub out evidence.
Ah, clever.
Of course it is. Oh, wait.
Man, who wrote that? Who wrote that? I got to figure it out.
John Broome? Yeah.
Not too familiar with that stuff.
Yeah, not familiar. Not familiar. Eraser also recently appeared in Neil Gaiman's 2009 story, Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader. God, I need to reread that because I don't remember that.
I don't remember that at all, and I know I've read that several times.
He was also in a flashback in Batman 682, which is R.I.P.
Right.
By the greatest comic book writer of all time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ronnie is biting his tongue right now.
He is. He is. And the funny thing is, like, I don't even need to say the name anymore. He's just like, that mother effer. I know who he's talking about.
Well, yeah. No, Morrison. Morrison, great.
Yeah, Morrison is great. Morrison Superman's great also.
Yes. But, I mean, the run he did on Batman, because that's where we first, you know, Batman and Son.
Yep.
Where Batman finally meets Damian. And then there was one between Batman and Son before R.I.P.
Well, and he had one of my favorite issues, which is Batman 666.
Yes.
Well, where it's a future Batman story where Damian Wayne is Batman.
Right.
And he is freaking vicious.
And I think they brought that in Batman 700, which was an anniversary issue. It had several vignettes, and I think he was also Damian as Batman was in that as well.
Yeah, there was a short story in that one too.
But yeah. He was not his father, as far as Batman concerned.
Well, now, like, we don't know if he's actually Batman's son, I guess. I don't freaking know what's happening. What is it? Deathstroke. Like, because apparently Deathstroke had a thing with Talia, and so Deathstroke may be Damian's dad? I don't freaking know, man.
Yeah. I haven't read much of that because I haven't been keeping up with Deathstroke. I read it when it first came out with Rebirth, and then I kind of fell off, so I haven't been keeping up.
Yeah, I haven't read the Batman Deathstroke stuff yet because I'm like 5 or 6 issues behind. Which back in the day used to be a long time. Now that's like 3 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah.
But is that one of the still? Is that still one of the bi-weeklies, or is it coming out monthly? I don't remember.
Dude, I don't know. Look, here's the way my comics purchasing goes. I subscribe to things. I get billed for them. They either show up in my Comixology library or in a box in my mailbox, and then I read them eventually.
Right.
Like, I don't even know anymore.
Well, I know you used to have the infamous spreadsheet that you talked about that I always wanted to see. You said you were going to show it or me.
Oh, that's my Batman spreadsheet.
Oh, your Batman spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's my Batman spreadsheet. Yeah, I'll share that. I'm going to delete some stuff because I don't want people to see how nerdy this spreadsheet is. But I'll post what it looks like. Matter of fact, I'll post it on Twitter tonight.
Okay. Oh, there's another book that came out today. I wasn't even expecting because of all the hype of everything else. But the third issue of Batman Creature of the Night was out today.
The Busiek.
The Kurt Busiek, yeah.
Dang it. Dude, I still haven't read the second issue yet.
So 3 came out today. I haven't read it, but that's a pretty damn good book.
Yeah, the first issue was really, really good. I'm behind on that one, and I have Dark Prince Charming, but I haven't read it yet.
I've got the first issue of that. I think the second one's coming out next month.
Yeah, pretty soon.
May or June.
Pretty soon. Those are big too, aren't they? Wasn't that book like $15? Or am I imagining
that? So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I can't remember.
It's good though. The art is beautiful.
Yeah, it really is.
Art is beautiful. God, there's too much to read. I don't even find the time.
I don't. Well, and the expense. I mean, it's like, and Dennis and I have talked about this several times on, well, we haven't talked about it. We've talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but it's like, you know, if we tried to buy every number one issue of every indie comic book that came out, there's no way you keep up.
No,
I can't afford it.
No,
I just can't do it.
There's no way. There is
no way. Kind of pick and choose with what, you know, I've been trying to focus on some of the, I think, better publishers like, Aftershock, Vault. I've really enjoyed what the Titan Comics has been doing with their hard case crime books.
What happened to those? They haven't put
out any. I don't know. They had several coming out and now it's just dried up.
Huh.
So I don't know. There's a hiatus. But yeah, just last week I got the last issue of The Girl Who Handcuffed Houdini. So mm-hmm. that series is over. And there's nothing else on the horizon. And I haven't gone through the April previews catalog yet. I need to do that. But as far as, the March previews, there's nothing coming out in the near future. So
that's too bad. I figured it would have gotten some more traction. With that, oh God, what's it called? Hotel Babylon, the Netflix movie?
Yeah.
But I don't even know if they mentioned that it's a comic on there. And I mean, like, the story isn't a typical comic book either, you know? So, like, I'm sure people watching it would never be like, oh, hey, let me go check out this comic too.
Well, it's also, and there was, one of the books they put out, Reassignment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's called The Assignment. It was originally released. It's called Reassignment.
Oh, that movie was so bad.
Yeah, it was Sigourney Weaver. I haven't seen it, but
yeah,
I heard
Sigourney Weaver and God, the girl from Fast and the Furious, Michelle Rodriguez.
Right.
Yeah.
The comic is just brilliant. It's absolutely it's really good, and they published those. They were $5.99 issues, but they were over double sized. There were like 66, 67 pages of content. And they put out in three issues, I think, for that, for the assignment. And same thing for, they did the series of, Millennium Girl, the girl with the dragon tattoo was
yep.
one of those.
Yep.
Which, have you seen that film?
Yeah, I've seen it.
That's a good film.
Yeah, it was interesting.
It was really good with Daniel Craig and, I don't remember the actress.
Yeah, she's got a Swedish name.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, I was trying to look on their website. They don't have anything.
Trying to find out about Hard Case Crime or Titan is the damn hardest stuff. Other than the only thing is you can really get a lot of information on is their Doctor Who books.
Oh yeah, they sell a ton of these.
Oh yeah. But I was trying, when we first started seeing those, I started trying to do some research on Hard Case Crime. And they also publish, and I don't think it's with Titan Comics, but Hard Case Crime, the same imprint with the same logo, they put out, novels, just prose books.
Yep.
I've seen them in my local library. But they're not associated with the same company that's doing the comics, but it's the same imprint, same logo, and
yeah, yeah. Titan, they're based out of what? They're in England, aren't they?
Yeah, they're a British company.
Yeah, yeah. They do a lot of books over there. I know they did like a tie-in book for Black Panther. They've got one. Either out already or like just came out or about to come out, one about Avengers. They've got some kind of deal with Marvel, but they're all like paperback books, and the thing is I don't think a lot of comic readers like read books, you know what I mean? So I don't know, what the crossover is on that.
I don't either. I remember some people. What was the book that Snyder and Lemire collaborated on? AD After Death, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was a combination of sort of comic and prose.
Yep.
And I remember some people saying, "There's a lot to read in here." Yeah. No, pick up a novel and.
Well, there's
really a lot of prose.
They just weren't expecting that because you know they saw Snyder and Lemire and they're like, oh, "Okay, like it's going to be a funny book."
Right.
And so they just weren't expecting that. Yeah, Titan's an interesting company. Same with, what's the company that owns Lion Forge? It's Catalyst Prime, so it is Lion Forge.
It's Lion Forge as a publisher.
Yeah.
They have a number of imprints.
Yep.
Catalyst Prime being one. They also have what they're called their Magnetic Collection, which has been a lot of what they're doing. They've been licensing foreign comics and reprinting them.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz Maynard.
Yep.
Which is one of Dennis and mine favorite from last year. Damn good. It was originally a Spanish comic from a few years ago that they've licensed. And, another one, Ghost Money, was a French comic.
Mm-hmm.
From a few years ago that they reproduced. And they've got an imprint called Cub, which is children's comics.
Oh, that makes sense.
They're doing interesting stuff. And they had a big presence at C2E2. In fact, their booth was right there at the entrance. It was like one of the first things you came to.
Well, where are they? They're in Missouri.
They're in St. Louis.
Yeah, they're in St. Louis, right.
And the interesting thing about it is they're based in St. Louis, but Dennis says they don't have much of a presence in their local comic shops up there.
Really?
That he's found. Yeah.
That seems odd.
It does.
Why,
I know.
Huh. Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
Because I know that, Aftershock's been doing a really big push, but Joe lives in Atlanta, so they're, like, down south here, they're all over the place. Like, every shop carries Aftershock.
Yeah.
So, since we were talking about Titan, I forgot about the Static Press. Because I just read a book from Static Press. Oh, man. They had Dr. Radar, which was, we were talking about Kid Lobotomy being weird. Dr. Radar was pretty weird also. What's the one that I just read recently? Man, now I can't remember. I need to look through my show notes. Yeah, Factory is Static Press, so it's owned by Titan Comics. And the writer and artist of that is Elog, or Elgo, is what he goes by. It's a short version of his last name. That was really interesting. Like I said, there's Dr. Radar and a few other things, so. And I think they've got something else they're bringing out from another European writer. Which I really dig those kind of books because they're very different storytelling, when compared to an American comic, you know?
Yeah, I remember when we did one of our early Best of the Rest podcast, we talked about Ghost Money. And one of the things that Dennis noticed about the artwork was that it seemed more cramped. Things seemed closer together.
Huh.
And I think I pointed out, well, in a lot of European cities, especially in the older sections of European cities, you can see it in the old films. They had very narrow streets and buildings are right up against each other.
Yep.
And so it's not surprising that you would see that in the artwork of, you know, these comics that are based in European settings. But yeah, I'm really liking. In fact, I've even made the opinion, and Dennis is maybe in agreement with me, that we're enjoying more We're more enjoying some of the Magnetic Collection comics than we are Callous Prime.
Really?
And some of them. Jazz Maynard is the favorite thing that Lion Forge is putting out right now for me. By far. Because it is just such a good story. And that guy's one badass character. He's a trumpet player. That's how plays jazz music. That's how he gets his nickname.
Oh, okay.
And he's involved in all kinds of various stuff. And he's a tough guy.
All right, I need to pick
that Batman up. Tough. Not Batman tough, but...
Well, I mean, who else could be Batman tough? You know what I
mean?
Well,
it's true.
Like, there could be only one.
The first series is out. I know you can get it in trade or probably off collected under Comixology.
Yeah.
The second series, they're in the middle of the second series right now.
I'm trying to find it on Amazon because they've got it on Comixology, but it's $20. Yeah, see the, okay. I'm just going to get the physical trade good at the same price. Ooh, hardcover.
That hardcover is nice. I got it. It's a oversized, really well made. The corners of it, like the, are rounded so that they resist damage.
Interesting.
I went and got that. I can't recommend it highly enough.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead and order this. But now you and Dennis talk about this book all the time, and I'm like, what the hell is this Jazz Maynard that they keep talking about? All right, it's ordered. I'll let you know when it gets here.
Okay.
It's prime shipping, so it'll be here Friday.
Yeah. It's a good book. Very good book.
Nice. I look forward to that. I think, Jay, it's time that we play a little game.
Okay.
Every week we have a guest on Therapy Thursday, and every week we have a new trivia challenge. And you might be Terry Moore fan number one. I don't know. Maybe you and Rodney might need to duke it out.
Dennis is up there too.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
He's kind of a late comer, but he's right up there. But yeah, I'm certainly one of them.
I guess we should say Paul too, otherwise he'll get mad.
Right.
Anyways, one of the things you love is Terry Moore, and so I didn't want to do a Batman trivia challenge for you. We're going to do a Terry Moore trivia challenge in a game called I Want More, Terry! Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, question number one. What three cartoonists does Terry Moore consider most influential to his career? Bonus points for correct book titles as well.
Give me a minute. And no, I'm not Googling. I'm playing fair.
No cheating. No duck going.
No, not go. Yeah, duck go. I'm wanting to say one of them was Charles Schulz.
Okay.
You know, Peanuts. Another one I may have been... I'm going to say Kirby, but Kirby, gosh, who wasn't influenced by Kirby?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, that's the only two I've got, Schulz and Kirby.
All right, I'm going to give you one-third of a point. The correct answer is Charles Schulz, which you said, from Peanuts.
Right.
Jeff Smith from Bone, and Dave Sim from Cerebus.
Oh.
Yeah.
That makes sense, given the type of food he does, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, Schulz, because he's a cartoonist, right? And so he really appreciated Schulz's career. And then at the time that he got into the comic scene, Dave Sim, I mean, Dave had been working for like 10 or 15 years by this point. Because Cerebus was big. But Jeff had just launched Bone probably like 5 years before that. And that was doing really well for him. So that's the reason. And those are the three people. All right, so one-third of a point. Let's see how you can do in this next one. Terry Moore began his comic book career with which comic book title, and in what year was it released?
Gosh, it's a Marvel book. I know it's a Marvel book. I'm just trying to remember which one
it is. All right, I'm going to say this. It is not a Marvel book.
It's not a Marvel book. Okay. I know he did...
He did do Marvel stuff.
Yes. I know. It's an anthology.
Is it?
Negative Burn.
Okay. I'm going to give you a half point.
Okay.
For Negative Burn. It's Negative Burn 13, but that's not the answer. The correct answer is apparently Strangers in Paradise. Now, the timing's a little weird, because according to the information that I find, Strangers in Paradise Volume 1 was 93 to 94. Negative Burn came out in 94. So that's why I'm going to give you the half point, because that's pretty damn close. Pretty dang close.
Yeah, and the odd thing is, Volume 1 of Strangers in Paradise was only 3 issues.
Correct.
I do know that. I remember that.
Yep. But... All right, you know what? Since you remember that, I'll give you a full point. We're pretty easy on the scoring here.
Hey, I need all help I can get. Hey, when I got that first third of a point, that was more than I anticipated getting at all. So everything else from here on out is gravy.
Awesome. All right, next up. Terry Moore was one of the founding fathers of which comic book studio? Now, this is maybe a trick question depending on how you read it. So I might accept a second answer, but there is one correct answer.
Okay, well, it's the obvious thing was his own studio, Abstract Studio, but that can't be the answer.
That is not the answer. I will tell you this. There were 7 titles published by the studio.
Wow. Oh gosh, I know I've read this somewhere.
It's a tough one, man. You know, there's a lot of comic companies that come and go.
Yeah,
I can't remember all of them.
All right, I'm going to take this is an absolute flying leap.
I like flying leap.
And I don't remember how, this just I don't know where this is coming from, but it's in the back of my head. Homage Comics?
The answer is Homage Comics.
Oh my gosh.
Homage Comics is the correct answer. Yep.
I don't even remember what they did, other than I think that I may have seen the logo on one of the early. Didn't they do the first volume of Strangers in Paradise? I can't remember.
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, that's probably where I remember it from. I probably saw that logo or something.
Yep. Homage was an imprint of Wildstorm Studios. Jim Lee's company.
That.
Yep. And then Jim Lee also had the Cliffhanger Studios, which had, Crimson, Battle Chasers, and one more, I can't remember. And then eventually, before Wildstorm got sold off to DC, they combined the two studios into one. Well, I guess this might be tough for the next question then, because the question is, name 3 of the 7 homage titles.
Strangers in Paradise.
Correct.
I
will give you a hint. 1 is one of my favorite books of all time. Soon to be defunct-ish.
Oh, you gave it to me then. Astro City.
Correct.
I don't know. I can't.
All right, so that's... Let's see, what's 2 out of 7? Let's just go with another third of a point.
Okay, that works for me.
The titles are Zero Girl by Sam Keith, Kurt Busiek's Astro City, Desperados by Jeff Marriott, Leave It to Chance by James Robinson, Strangers in Paradise by Terry Moore, Reload by Warren Ellis, and Red by Warren Ellis.
I wouldn't have guessed Warren Ellis would have been involved with them.
Indeed he was. Red eventually made into a major motion picture with Bruce Willis.
Yes. Oh, man.
Dude, I really liked that movie. It was a fun movie. All right, on to the next question. One of Moore's most popular titles is Strangers in Paradise. How many volumes of the book are there? And for bonus points, which publishers published each volume?
I'm pretty sure there's 3 volumes.
Okay.
I believe Homage did the first one, Volume 1.
So close. Homage did do a volume, of course, because we talked about that. But they did not do Volume 1.
That's interesting, because I know it's almost entirely self-published, so...
Hmm.
Abstract Studios for Volume 3, I want to guess.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't have a guess for Volume 2.
All right. The correct answer is Volume 1, which, as you said, was 3 issues, was Antarctic Press.
Wow.
Volume 2, Abstract Studios, 14 issues. Volume 3, Homage, with 8 issues. And then continuing on, 82 issues at Abstract Studios again.
Interesting. I wouldn't have caught that. Certainly at Antarctic Press.
Yeah, I don't remember ever reading anything from Antarctic Press. I looked up what they were doing. I don't remember any of it. I know they put out like Robotech comics, but that's about all I know. All right, I'm going to give you... Ooh, that's a tough one. I will give you 0.95 points.
Okay. I hope you're writing this down, because I'm not. I'm not editing this.
I'm writing it down. We'll see about my math. All right. All of Moore's books take place in the same universe, so it would make sense that there would be crossovers.
Yes.
Characters from Moore's Rachel Rising appeared in another one of his books. Name the book, and for bonus points, issue number that these characters appeared in.
Oh, I know, because it recently came out. It was Strangers in Paradise 25, the second volume, second issue.
You are correct. I will
give
you. That's
just been out recently.
I will give you 1 point, and then I will also give you a half point speed bonus.
Well, I only know that because that only came out like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's pretty recent. There was another crossover, though. I will give you 5 bonus points if you can tell me what the other crossover is. And it's a single character.
From Rachel Rising?
Maybe.
Could be okay. It's gonna be, there was the character Libby, who was in Strangers in Paradise, who appeared in Motor Girl.
Wow. Very nice. I will give you... What's a weird fraction? 0.83
pi.
Points.
Pi. 3.14. Give me 3.14.
3.14 points. For the bonus question. Cool. Very nice. All right. Rachel Rising earned Moore several industry awards. Which awards were they, and what categories did he win?
Oh, God.
Now, this is a tough one, so these will be 1 point apiece. And then for the bonus points, I'll give you 2 points apiece.
I don't know. I know he's won an Eisner, but I can't tell you. Don't know if he's won a Harvey or not.
Okay. Can you name the categories for which he's won?
No.
Dang it, Jay!
I'm trying a complete blank.
All right, so he won the Harvey Award for Best Letterer in 2014, and the Harvey Award for Best Cartoonist in 2015, both for Rachel Rising.
Right.
By the way, I love Motor Girl, but Rachel Rising is still my favorite thing that he's ever done.
That's right up there.
Yeah. Well, plus it's right up my alley, because it's a horror book.
Well, you should. If you haven't heard, after he finishes this next run, he's planning on doing another Rachel Rising after he finishes this Strangers in Paradise.
Very exciting.
He says that story is unfinished, so there'll be more Rachel Rising.
Very exciting. All right, final question. This can give you 1 million bonus points because it's a tough one. While he may be best known for his creator-owned work, Moore has also done work for Marvel, Image, DC, and more. Name 3 of these titles. Bonus points for each additional right answer. 2 bonus points for each correct issue number as well.
Oh my gosh.
And if you didn't tell, my math is great. All that adds up to 1 million points.
Right. Only thing I know of, I think this... And I'm not even sure of this. I think he did some covers for Spider-Man.
He did.
But I don't... issues... No, I'm not going to know.
Is that on my list? It is on my list. He did. He did Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, Volume 2.
I don't know. Other than that, I'm not going to be able to get it.
All right. Here's the rundown. of other works. Lady Supreme, numbers 1 and 2.
Which never heard of that.
You've never heard of Lady Supreme?
No, never.
Yeah, she's the daughter of Supreme.
Well, that makes
sense.
See,
I'm bringing it all back. Alan Moore wrote Supreme and made it awesome. Terry Moore, not related to Alan Moore, did a couple issues of Lady Supreme. He also did, where's my list? There it is. Gen 13 Bootleg, 14 and 15. Star Wars Tales number 5. Paradise 2! 14 issues. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Willow and Tara. Birds of Prey, 47, 48, 49. DC First, Batgirl, Joker number 1. Ultimate Marvel Team Up 14.
Really?
Yeah. I gotta check that out. I don't even know that.
I didn't know he did any Batman or Bat family stuff.
Ultimate Marvel Team Up 14, The Darkness Vampirella number 1, which I gotta read that. I love The Darkness. Treehouse of Horror number 12, Simpsons book. Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane volume 2. Strange Tales 2 number 3. Fables number 107. And he wrote Runaways volume 3 issues 1 through 9 for Marvel.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Did not know that.
All right, let's tally up your scores. Oh, man, that's a whole lot of math. We're going to say you received 67 points. That's not even true. Congratulations, Jay. You are the winner of this week's Terry Moore Trivia Challenge. How does it feel?
Well, thank you. It feels... I'm words fail me.
Oh, man. All right. It is time to wrap this up. I have had a lot of therapy today. Thank you, Jay, for joining me on Therapy Thursday's episode of Comic Talk Today.
Glad to do it. I feel much more sane than I did 2 hours ago.
Well, that might be a problem. If you want to find Jay, of course, check out the Best of the Rest podcast on your favorite iTunes, Google Play, whatever other podcast player, or going to nerdlegion.com. You can find him at Jay Forgets on Twitter. Of course, you can find me at Geekvine. Comic Talk Today at gmail.com if you want to email me. All the podcast places. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow with some stuff. I don't know what yet. Thanks for listening. Yeah.